Are you seeking fulfillment for your life? Do you want freedom from fear? That's why we're here. Welcome to Jesus 101, introducing you to the real Jesus. And now, here's your host, Elizabeth Talbot.
We're going through a mini-series on the life of David that we have entitled, A Man After God's Heart. God himself said that David was after his own heart. And I have always been intrigued of why did God call David that when David, in fact, messed up so many times in his life. So I am doing certain stories in his life where he shows the type of grace and kindness and a God-like spirit towards those that don't seem to deserve it. And then we're going to do two more days on great sins of David when he needed God's grace and he got it. So we are learning so much about God, Jesus, and his grace through the life of David, and that's why we're doing this mini-series. Now, I must confess that today's story is one of those that I think summarize who David really was in his heart and why was it that God called him that. I think this story today shows the heart of God, really. Now, before we go there, I want to ask you a question. Perhaps there are times in your life when you have thought you just have gone too far, that you are such an outcast that God would never ever want to look at you and say, I love you, because you have gone just beyond to the other side. I have met people like that. As a matter of fact, I work with sexually addicted ministers, people who have devoted their lives to the spreading of the gospel and are addicted to sex. And they think that they have gone too far. They have two lives completely separate, and they believe that there is no redemption for them, even though they are preachers of redemption. And the fact that God can reach us, that his arms are long enough to save us, no matter where we are and how outcast we may be in the society or in other people's eyes, is not the case with God. God can reach us there. And this story of David talks about the way that David behaved with a person that would have been considered an outcast because of many different reasons, not just one. So I'm going to start the story on 2 Samuel chapter 9. Now, perhaps you remember that before, back in 1 Samuel chapter 20, David had made a covenant with Jonathan. They were very, very close friends. And David had told him that he would take care of Jonathan's family when David was on the throne. Now, we start with a striking question now in 2 Samuel chapter 9. Verse 1, David said, is there yet anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now, it's important to understand the customs of the time, to understand how shocking this question actually is. This showing kindness is covenantal language, by the way. But this was not the way that a new king behaved with the family of the previous king. As a matter of fact, the custom was exactly the opposite. If you were coming to the kingdom, you would exterminate all the descendants of the previous king. You would not want to have anyone alive so that they wouldn't take over the throne. So this is such a strange question. I want to know if anybody's alive so that I can show kindness to them. It's exactly the opposite of the custom. You can imagine that some people probably were a little suspicious about this. Now, there was a servant of the house of Saul, we're told in verse 2, whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, are you Ziba? And he said, yes, I am your servant. And the king said, is there not yet anyone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God? And Ziba said to the king, there's still a son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet. I tell you, we don't even get the name. I mean, Ziba doesn't even say the name of the son of Jonathan. He's known by something else. He's known by the fact that he's crippled. You know, sometimes people know other people by identities that have to do with name-calling or great sins or great deficiencies or great handicaps. You know, when you say, well, there goes the adulteress, or there goes the jailbird, or there goes the alcoholic. They have names, but we don't know them by their names. And here we're not told the name. As a matter of fact, he says, yes, there is a son of Jonathan, but let me warn you, he's a cripple. He's crippled in both feet. So, King David, if you're looking for somebody that has a little bit of status, this is not him. But the king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba said to the king, "Behold, he's in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lodebar." Now, let me tell you a little bit about Lodebar. First of all, Lodebar was a city transjordan. It was on the other side of the Jordan. I mean, if you look at a map of Israel even today, and you look to see where the Jordan River is, on the left side were the good people. It was Israel and all that had happened there. But on the other side of the Jordan were the other people, the ones that didn't belong to us, the ones that didn't deserve to be in our territory. But on top of that, Lodebar means without pasture or desolate land. Not only is he far, far away, and you can understand why he would go so far, because he's afraid of the new king, right? I mean, remember the custom where they would exterminate all the relatives? So not only was he a cripple on both feet, he lived on the other side of town, in the wrong side of town. And on top of that, the name of the city was desolate. And verse 5 tells us that King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodebar. Can you imagine that day in Lodebar? Can you imagine this desolate place on the other side of the Jordan and this big caravan of whatever is it that David sent, camels or horses or chariots, go in this place where they hadn't seen anything exciting for the last 50 years? And we get the whole royal whatever coming to get Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is the name of the cripple, which we haven't been calling by name so far. Verse 6. Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and prostrated himself. And David said, "Mephibosheth." And he said, "Here's your servant." And he must have been trembling, anxious, because the first thing David says to him in verse 7 is, "Do not fear." I can't even tell you what this means to me, because so many people, whether they're addicted to sex or alcohol or being away from God, the first response to God is the same thing. It's fear. It's trembling. It's anxiety. Wonder what God is going to do to me when I come back. And David here, who says that he's showing the kindness of God in verse 3, responds exactly like God responds. And the first thing is, do not fear. Do you know that this is the most known and repeated command in all of the scriptures? Because God doesn't want us to be afraid of him. This is something that happened with sin. Adam and Eve started being fearful of God, but that's not the way it was at the beginning. And David said to him, "Don't fear. I will show kindness to you." As a matter of fact, the word is, "I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore you all the land of your grandfather." So this is the first part of the restoration. You can have your land back, which, by the way, God is doing the same thing for us. "I will restore all the land to you. All that belonged to Saul, your grandfather, is going to be yours. But you, Mephibosheth, you're just very special to me. So even though I'm giving you all the land, you shall eat at my table regularly. You will be one of my kids. You will sit with me." And of course, Mephibosheth doesn't know where this has come from. I mean, outcasts never expect abundance because they're used to being outcasts. It's like a homeless person coming to the presidential breakfast. And, you know, you don't expect it, and it's undeserved. And that's why abundance for the outcast is another principle of the gospel. You're going to eat at my table regularly. And he prostrated himself and said, "What is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me?" Look at the self-deprecation title that he uses. "I'm a dead dog. How can you do this?" But it was done, because David was acting with the kindness of God. And then we're told later on that the whole thing happened exactly like David said. Verse 11, "Then Ziba said to the king, 'According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servants will do.' So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons." I tell you, every time I take communion, you know, if you don't know what communion is, the Lord's Supper, you can go to Mark 14 and read it there. When God says, "Okay, come to the table with me and remember that you will be with me in my kingdom because of what I've done for you. And we have all the symbols of the death of Christ. And we partake together knowing that we will be sitting at the table with the Lord. When I imagine myself sitting at that banquet table in heaven, I always imagine myself like Mephibosheth, you know? Can you imagine this lame feet just with excitement under that table the first day that Mephibosheth went to David's table saying, I can't believe I'm a cripple and here I am sitting at the king's table. That's exactly how I feel every time I take the Lord's Supper, and is the way I will feel in heaven when I will be sitting at the king's table. And because of his kindness and because of the abundance that he gives to the outcast, I, a very handicapped person in many different ways, emotionally and spiritually, will be sitting at the king's table, moving my feet in excitement because of the abundance for the outcast that was provided for me.
Thank you for joining us today on Jesus 101. For more insights and resources, connect with us at Jesus101.tv. That's Jesus101.tv. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Jesus101Institute and follow us on Twitter at Jesus101Media. Until next time, live free.
Woohoo!